Embassy in Stockholm, Sweden's capital. The sacrilegious act occurred on Saturday, 21st of January. The notorious racist was protected by police while committing the blasphemous act. The Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman has strongly condemned the desecration of the Holy Quran, saying the move is a clear example of hate-mongering and violence against Muslims. The Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman, Aser Kanani, said on Saturday, 21st of January, "The repetition of the desecration of the holy book of 1.5 billion Muslims is a clear example of hate-mongering and spread of violence against all Muslims." Jordan censured the burning of a copy of the Holy Quran in Stockholm, stressing the kingdom's rejection of the act that fuels hatred. It underscored the necessity to spread the culture of peace and acceptance, saying Jordan condemns extremism and that condemning extremism is a collective responsibility. Kuwait's Foreign Minister Sheikh Salem Abdullah Al-Jaber Al-Sabah said in a statement, "The incident hurts Muslim sentiments across the world and marks a serious provocation." The Kuwaiti Foreign Minister called on the international community to shoulder responsibility by stopping such unacceptable acts and denouncing all forms of hatred and extremism and bringing the perpetrators to accountability. Egypt also expressed its strong condemnation of the disgraceful act that provokes the feelings of hundreds of millions of Muslims worldwide, warning of the dangers of spreading such acts that offend religious and fuel hatred and violence. The United Arab Emirates called for upholding the values of tolerance and peaceful coexistence and preventing offense to all religions and their sanctities through such extremist practices that contradict the values of respect for religion. Qatar also condemned the Swedish authorities' permission to burn the Holy Quran and called on the international community to shoulder its responsibilities to reject hatred and violence. Pakistan's foreign ministry said in a statement, "This senseless and provocative Islamophobic act hurts the religious sensibilities of over 1.5 billion Muslims worldwide. Moreover, tens of thousands of people have poured onto the streets in Yemen to strongly condemn the sacrilegious act by the Swedish-Danish right-wing extremist." The Reuters news agency has also covered this story and tells us more. Turkey has threatened Sweden with refusing to back its membership bid in the US-led military alliance NATO in reaction to Stockholm's recent condoning of desecration of the Holy Quran in front of the Turkish embassy in Stockholm. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said in a speech after a cabinet meeting on Monday, 23rd of January, "Those who allow such blasphemy in front of our embassy can no longer expect our support for their NATO membership." Adding to his remarks, Erdogan blasted Sweden for loving enemies of Islam and members of terrorist organizations, a reference to the anti-Ankara groups who have been provided with asylum in Sweden. The Turkish president said, "If you love members of terrorist organizations and enemies of Islam so much and protect them, then we advise you to seek their support for your country's security." Meanwhile, a diplomatic source has said Turkey has summoned Sweden's ambassador to condemn the anti-Islam demonstration by the Danish-Swedish extremist politician in Stockholm. Turkish foreign ministry officials told the Swedish ambassador, "We condemn this provocative act, which is clearly a hate crime, in strongest possible terms." The source added, they also blasted Sweden's unacceptable authorization of the demonstration under the pretext of defending democratic rights. Also, Turkey has called off a visit by Sweden's defense minister against the backdrop of the burning of the Holy Quran, which happened in Stockholm by a right-wing extremist whose anti-Islam conduct sparked riots in the European country last year. Turkey's defense minister, Hulusi Akar, said on Saturday, 21st of January, "At this point, Swedish Defence Minister Pål Jonson's visit to Turkey on 27th of January has lost its significance and meaning, so we have cancelled this visit. The visit was aimed at addressing Turkey's objection to Sweden's bid to join NATO. The English website of the Al Jazeera television channel has also covered this story. The High Representative of the United Nations Alliance of Civilizations condemned the burning of the Holy Quran by a Swedish-Danish far-right politician as a vile act. A spokesperson for Miguel Ángel Moratinos said in a statement released on Sunday, 22nd of January, "While the High Representative stresses the importance of upholding the freedom of expression as a fundamental human right, he also emphasizes that the act of burning the Holy Quran amounts to an expression of hatred against Muslims." The statement added, "It is disrespectful and insulting to the adherents of Islam and should not be conflated with freedom of expression." Miguel Ángel Moratinos, who heads a United Nations agency that describes itself as devoted to promoting understanding across diverse communities, said he was concerned about the rise in discrimination, intolerance and violence directed against members of many religious and other communities in various parts of the world. Moratinos called for the building of mutual respect and promotion of inclusive and peaceful societies rooted in human rights and dignity for all. Shortly after, the Swedish-Danish extremist politician Paludan burned a copy of the Holy Quran, Turkey's foreign minister Mevlüt Çavuşoğlu condemned Swedish authorities for failing to ban the protest. Çavuşoğlu said, "It's a racist act, it's not about freedom of expression." Somalia's foreign ministry said in a statement on Monday, 23rd of January, "Allowing this hateful act that insults Islamic sanctities and values is completely unacceptable. It's nothing but a demagogic practice that promotes hatred and racism and serves the agendas of extremism and terrorism." A group of protesters gathered outside the Swedish embassy in Ankara, Turkey, over the weekend to decry the burning of the Holy Quran in Stockholm. In Bangladesh, people also demonstrated against the incident. The Organization of the Islamic Corporation, OIC, said the provocative action targets Muslims, insults their sacred values, and serves as a further example of the alarming level reached by Islamophobia. The OIC asked Sweden to punish those behind this hate crime.
Depression is a mood disorder that causes a persistent feeling of sadness and loss of interest. It affects how you feel, think, and behave, and can lead to a variety of emotional and physical problems. Patients may have trouble doing normal day-to-day activities and could sometimes even feel as if life isn't worth living. I'm Zarin Shajeri, and this one is Aperture. Depression may require long-term treatment with a host of pills, antidepressants, anxiolytics, neuroleptics, and tranquilizers, but sometimes the cure could be much worse than the ailment. Thousands of documented cases prove that the prescription of such drugs have led to suicide, acts of violence, and even murder. Death by prescription reveals the shocking truth about psychotropic drugs and a healthcare system that perhaps undermines the potential dangers of such medication. Stay with us for this part of the documentary.
Mark was 48 years old when he committed suicide in October 2013. He was suffering from recurring back pain and had had an operation, but the cure was worse than the ailment. It hit him hard, and he was prescribed antidepressants. Mark was the father of two children and had never had suicidal thoughts before, but in less than a week, the medication sent him into madness. His sister Florence has still not recovered from it. Is an antidepressant responsible for the death of Florence's brother? These heartbreaking events are echoed in thousands of documented cases across the world. Psychotropic drugs are under the spotlight. Antidepressants, anxiolytics, neuroleptics, sleeping pills, and tranquilizers are supposed to stitch together the fragilities of the soul. They save many lives. But can they also lead to suicide or even murder? What are these psychotropic medications that are sometimes held responsible for acts of violence? First off are antidepressants, the grandfather of the new wave being Prozac. This antidepressant is supposed to act upon depressive states, deep sadness, psychic fatigue, and anxiety. It should give a mood boost in order to bring the patient back to a stable condition. In France, it's taken by at least 6 million people. Next, we have the benzodiazepines, with the most widespread examples being anxiolytic drugs such as Valium or Xanax, but also a high number of sleeping pills. They treat states of anxiety, panic attacks, and insomnia. Unlike antidepressants, they bring the mood down to calm the anxiety. It's a bestseller in France. 11.5 million people take it each year, more than one in four adults. Finally, there are various tranquilizers and powerful neuroleptics, which influence the nerves. Nobody disagrees with how useful these medications are, as they act upon serotonin, a neurotransmitter that regulates the mood. But depending on individuals, they can short-circuit the brain, which can be dangerous and even fatal. In France, Professor Evan is one of the only doctors to sound the alarm. He has compiled or translated a handful of reports and studies that warn against psychotropic drugs. At what moment do these medications become dangerous? For benzodiazepines, whose effects are immediate, it's during the first days of the treatment, especially when coming off the medication. For a large number of people, anxiolytics or sleeping pills can be more addictive than heroin, which is why the treatment shouldn't last longer than a few weeks. As for antidepressants, which don't take effect until 2 or 3 weeks of use, murder or suicide can occur during the first few days of treatment, whenever the dosage is increased or when the medications are stopped. When this happens, a devastating rebound effect can occur that places some patients in a state that they feel compelled to continue. Before taking his life, Florence's brother was right at the beginning of his treatment. In his letter, he speaks of having acid in his body. Are prescriptions given too readily in France? To allow us to find out, we went to 6 randomly chosen medical clinics equipped with a hidden camera. 95% of psychotropic medication is supplied by general practitioners. Our scenario will be simple, going through a rough patch due to losing a job. 5 minutes and 32 seconds was all it took to get a prescription of anxiolytics during the first consultation. The second doctor hands over a prescription of antidepressants, which he confirms have virtually no side effects whatsoever. The third is not strictly in favor of psychotropic medication, but strangely, he still supplies Seroplex, an antidepressant. Only the fourth finds it too early to give a psychotropic medication in such a case. Antihistamines are also used to treat allergies, but they can facilitate sleep. The fifth proposes an anxiolytic. She suggests a half tablet, then a whole, then two, then up to four a day. The prescription lasts 3 months, whereas the recommended limit is 8 weeks due to the extremely addictive effects of Xanax. If that isn't enough, she suggests adding an antidepressant. But the record was beaten by the last doctor, who proposed both an anxiolytic and an antidepressant in only 2 minutes. Everybody's happy, except when psychotropic medication drives somebody mad. Here's a brilliant young girl, Aurélie. 6 years ago, her treatment transformed her into a destructive machine. Aurélie could have died or gone insane. She attempted suicide and was then committed to a psychiatric hospital. 6 years ago, with a master's degree in economics, she found a job in New York. She worked hard, went out often, and was close to burnout. She returned to Paris. Her general practitioner was absent, so she met with a psychiatrist. The peaceful young girl was in a rage, and it worried her. So she consulted other doctors. Aurélie had a strong reaction to the dosage increase. A suicide attempt, followed by a psychiatric hospital. She therefore decides to stop the treatment. The violent urges disappeared immediately, but it would take her 2 years to fully recover. Today, Aurélie has rebuilt her life. She lives in London, where she has become a painter. But she still wants to know what really happened. She therefore meets with a reputed British psychiatrist, David Healy. For the pharmaceutical industry, this man is a menace. For years, he has denounced psychotropic medication as dangerous, and his expertise has led to major criticism for the leading laboratories. He claims that these pills are useful, but dangerous.
Well, first of all, the pills can be helpful. I use these pills to treat people, but they don't suit everyone. And when they don't suit you, they can definitely be poisonous. They can make you want to kill yourself. They can make you want to kill other people. And they can generally cause you to hear voices and become crazy. There's certainly about one in 20 people who go on the pills, at least, have what you could call an extreme reaction to them. So that's actually fairly common, okay? Roughly half of the people that go on these pills, they just aren't suited to them. They have a bad reaction, but they don't have an extreme reaction.
If someone has a side effect of the medication, they can say, listen, it's because you had a depression at the beginning, that's why you were like this. So they make you feel that it's because of your first state that you feel so bad. It's not because of the medication.
And this is the problem. This is where things really go wrong, where once you've been put on the pills, doctors don't recognize when they have made things worse. What they say is it's down to doctors. We make the pills. It's down to doctors to use them wisely. If things go wrong, it's the doctor's fault, not ours. Now, the pharmaceutical industry have as much control of the situation as the Soviet Union used to have during the 1960s.
Aurélie comes out of the interview with the impression that she was the victim of a medical error. She thinks about her psychiatrist with a heavy heart. So she will meet up with her 6 years later to finally turn the page. The psychiatrist concedes an error in the diagnosis, but the whole system leads to an increase of psychotropic consumption. It's in the interest of pharmaceutical companies to have a high number of ill people, as psychotropic medication represents a global market of tens of billions of dollars. As the number one user in the world of such medication, France is a true cash register. These happiness pills are making the pharmaceutical companies smile. Their profits exceed those of the petroleum companies. In the United States, this exaggerated medicalization has a particular resonance. As the years went by, unexplained suicides by children taking antidepressants or anxiolytics hit the public opinion. Here, a 10-year-old child is phoning the emergency services. His 14-year-old sister has attempted suicide, having been on Paxil for just a few days, an antidepressant known in France under the name of Seroxat.
This is 911. Who is this? Where is your sister? What is she trying to do? Take pills?
What? Is she trying to... My dad told me.
Hold on, tell me!
GSK, the laboratory that manufactures Paxil, managed to conceal explosive studies conducted by its own experts. Following a court trial, the authorities obliged GSK to reveal the studies. They showed that the medication increased suicidal thoughts or acts by up to 8 times. Massacres perpetrated by teenagers should also be mentioned. 9 out of 10 killers were on a cocktail of psychotropic medication. Despite thousands of people that call for action against the pharmaceutical companies, Psychotropic medication remains a bestseller in the U.S., and it's business as usual. Every year, the powerful American Psychiatric Association organizes the most important symposium on the planet. Over 5 days, 15,000 psychiatrists from across the globe attend several conferences. The pharmaceutical industry struck gold. It largely finances the event by promoting its latest medications, and the stands invade an entire hall. For the occasion, even the Vice President of the USA, Joe Biden, is here. This reflects the importance of the event. Leading the American Psychiatric Association is Jeffrey Lieberman, certainly the most influential psychiatrist on the planet. During the press conference, we asked him questions regarding the dangers of psychotropic medication.
These are not dangerous drugs by and large, or certainly no more dangerous than those which are used routinely for other non-psychiatric types of disorders. The side effects should never be a deterrent for somebody who genuinely suffers from depression getting treatment.
This is a disease, a brain disorder, with about a 5% mortality rate. Depression is a disorder where you cannot experience emotion because you feel dead inside. You feel hopeless, helpless, and you would be dead, but you probably don't have the wherewithal to figure out how to commit suicide.
A lot of the over-exaggeration about fears of side effects and are promulgated by people who either don't know or don't want to know, and they foment this.
Is Jeffrey Lieberman best positioned to answer about this medication? The list of pharmaceutical companies that finance him is infinite. We can better understand why Jeffrey Lieberman doesn't much like party poopers, the hundreds of protesters who regularly come to disturb the great gathering of psychiatry. This includes a multitude of associations, as well as the Citizens Commission on Human Rights, which is run by Scientologists. Today's slogan, "Stop Drugging Our Soldiers." A wave of unexpected suicides effectively shook the U.S. Army, and the protesters blame the antidepressants that are administered in 9 out of 10 cases.
22 U.S. veterans are committing suicide every single day. There are more active duty military dying from suicide in 2012 than on the battlefield. There are 49 international drug regulatory warnings on antidepressants that caution against aggression, mania, suicide, in some cases homicidal ideation. It's outrageous. So it's not as if the psychiatrists don't know.
Faced with the protesters, the mainly foreign psychiatrists are somewhat skeptical.
What I just discussed a little with them was that there seems to be sometimes it's difficult to know if there's a causative relationship. If you have a progression in the disease and you are medicated too, is it the medication or is it the disease itself?
I read stories that quite a few veterans committed suicide last year, but I was wondering how many suicides have been prevented by taking antidepressants. So I suppose you can't cure everything with just taking a pill. You should give the psychotherapy as well, but I'm not sure if the antidepressants are only responsible for the increased suicide rate.
In the Congress room, many conferences take place one after another, but nobody is dealing with the dangers of antidepressants. One of them is led by Anthony Rothschild, a psychiatrist well known for his successful books on psychotropic drugs. The great specialist is holding a debate on the adaptation of treatments depending on the illness. But not once does he say that antidepressants should not be prescribed. Our question is straightforward.
It seems that there is a lot of danger with antidepressants. What do you think about this? Like suicide or, murders?
No. I mean, I don't know what you're talking about, but I just told you there's no reliable scientific evidence that antidepressants cause people to commit murder or any other crime or suicide.
So how come that on boxes?
Right, this is not serious, okay?
Is this a surprising reaction? Anthony Rothschild also has conflicts of interest with an impressive number of pharmaceutical companies.
So I told you what I thought. You're going to keep asking me the same question. Okay, well, you got my quote, all right?
Okay, very good.
How can such things still be said in this day and age when on all the stands promoting psychotropic medication, whole boards are covered by signs warning of side effects? Among the several side effects, the risk of suicide or violent behavior is prioritized by all. These warnings are a legal obligation enforced by medical organizations. But how much are these warnings worth next to the publicity hype from the pharmaceutical companies?
When you're depressed, where do you want to go? Nowhere. Who do you feel like seeing? No one. Depression hurts in so many ways.
These ads banned in France reach tens of millions of households in the United States, one of the rare countries where the promotion of medication is allowed. For the promoters of these ads, a new customer is a captive customer.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Economists are saying that Britain is facing the worst and longest recession and the weakest economic recovery this year among the G7 countries. According to economists, inflationary shock caused by the war in Ukraine and the spread of coronavirus will affect the United Kingdom more than any other major economy in the world. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. According to leading economic forecasters at the business consultancy EY, the United Kingdom's impending recession could be twice as bad as previously thought. Reduced government support, higher taxes, and an overall worsening outlook have all led the firm's analysts to conclude that the next 3 years could be worse than they anticipated 3 months ago. In October, EY's Item Club had predicted a 0.3% contraction in the gross domestic product GDP this year, followed by a 2.4% growth next year, and a 2.3% rise in 2025. But in an updated forecast released on Monday, 23rd of January, it said gross domestic product GDP would drop 0.7% this year, followed by growth of just 1.9% next year and 2.2% in 2025. The downgrade is at odds with recently published economic data and the sentiment coming out of the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, which suggested the global outlook was not quite as grim as first feared. In recent weeks, the FTSE 100 has neared its highest level ever. EY's UK chair, Hywel Bull, said, "The United Kingdom's economic outlook has become gloomier than forecast in the autumn, and the United Kingdom may already be in what has been one of the most widely anticipated recessions in living memory." Hywel Bull said, "While the recession could cut deeper than previously thought, it would not necessarily last longer than earlier forecasts noted." EY said it was still unclear if the country was already in recession, as defined by 2 quarters of consecutive GDP contraction. While the economy shrank in the third quarter of last year, gross domestic product or GDP figures released this year showed that the economy grew unexpectedly in November by 0.1%, leading some economists to think the fourth quarter might also be positive. Despite this, EY said the United Kingdom was still expected to hit recession this year, shrinking during the first half of 2023 before returning to growth during the summer. It claimed the recession would probably also prove less damaging for the economy than the recessions of the 1980s, 1990s and 2000s. The economists forecast that inflation would hit 7.2% this year on average, including a big jump when the government's energy support scheme becomes £500 a year less generous for the typical household from start of April. Sky News has also covered this issue and tells us more. This Christmas, most Brits had to rein in their spending as the cost of living crisis has forced most of them to cut back to withstand the impact of record high inflation. Most people will remember what it was like to live through the 2008 recession, part of the global economic crisis. Britain also briefly entered a recession in 2020, but recovered by the autumn of that year. Now, high energy prices, the war in Ukraine, Brexit, and the fallout from the pandemic is causing inflation to rise at a worrying rate, and the economy is shrinking. A recession is defined as 2 successive quarters of negative gross domestic product growth, with the Office for Budget Responsibility, the OBR, confirming that the United Kingdom tipped into a recession in November of last year. It predicts this will last until at least the autumn of this year. Figures suggest consumer spending failed to keep pace with inflation in December, likely bolstering the view among economists that the United Kingdom is in recession. Closely watched data from the British Retail Consortium, BRC, and Barclaycard showed spending rose by 6.9% and 4.4% in value terms, respectively, in December compared to a year ago. Both readings fell short of inflation, which stood at 10.7% when last measured in November of last year. They were also flattered by the impact of COVID in December of 2021, when the spread of the Omicron variant forced people to cut back on Christmas gatherings. There was further separate evidence that online shopping suffered last month due to jitters among shoppers about the impact of strikes by frontline Royal Mail workers. E-commerce trade body IMRG reported a 12% dip compared to the same month last year. It noted that the final week before Christmas was particularly badly hit by delivery disruption. The British Retail Consortium, VRC's Retail Sales Monitor, compiled with KPMG, warned that shoppers face further price hikes ahead if costs such as energy bills did not settle down. Paul Martin, the UK head of retail at KPMG, said the cost of living crisis dominated the festive season. The Reuters news agency has also covered this story and tells us more. Retail sales in Great Britain fell unexpectedly in December as cost-conscious consumers cut back on spending in the run-up to Christmas in response to higher prices, surging bills and a weak economic backdrop. The Office for National Statistics, the ONS, said the surprise 1% decline in sales volumes, economists had forecast a rise of half a percentage point, was down to factors including rampant increases in food prices and a fall in online purchases as consumers worried about a wave of postal strikes affecting Christmas deliveries. The fall in December was partly driven by fewer sales of makeup, sports equipment, games, toys, watches and jewellery compared with a year earlier, suggesting consumers reined in spending on gifts as they had less money because of high inflation and soaring bills. Heather Boville, the Deputy Director for Surveys and Economic Indicators at the Office for National Statistics, said retail sales dropped again in December with feedback suggesting consumers cut back on their Christmas shopping due to affordability concerns. Heather Boville added online sales dipped with feedback indicating postal strikes were leading people towards purchasing more goods in store. The Office for National Statistics said retail sales fell by 5.7% year-on-year in the 3 months to the end of December, with sales in the final month of the year 1.7% below pre-pandemic levels. According to the latest figures, food store sales fell by 0.3% in December after a 1% rise the previous month, when there was a boost as many consumers sought to stretch the costs associated with Christmas by stocking up early, with supermarkets blaming price increases. Several of the United Kingdom's major retailers reported bumper sales over the festive period, but that was largely the result of higher prices rather than higher sales volumes. Recently, the British Retail Consortium, the BRC, said annual food inflation jumped to 13.3% in the month of December, the highest monthly rate since it began collecting data in 2005. Overall, food store sales were down 5.9% last year as the lifting of COVID restrictions led to hospitality industry reopening and consumers targeting more of their budget on eating and going out. Sales volumes at non-food stores, which includes department stores, clothing, household goods and other non-food stores, fell 2.1% month-on-month in December as consumers continued to cut back on spending because of increased prices and affordability concerns. There was a 6.2% fall in sales at non-food stores fueled by a slump in purchases at cosmetic and jewellery shops and of sports equipment, games, toys and watches. Department store sales fell 3.1% compared with a rise of 2.1% in November, which benefited from extended Black Friday promotions.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Men and women as human beings are completely equal in Islam. This is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, meeting with hundreds of prominent Iranian women in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on January 4th, 2023. The woman of the family is like the air that is breathed in that environment. It is narrated that a woman is like sweet basil. She is not a maidservant. But this narration here is about the family. Sweet basil means that she is like a flower, perfume, pleasant fragrance. That is, this is the air that fills the environment. The word kahraman, maidservant, in Arabic is different in meaning from the word kahraman in Persian. Kahraman in Arabic means a maid, worker, or for example, a supervisor. A woman is not a maid servant. In the family environment, you shouldn't think that you can make the woman do all the work just because you have a wife now. No, if she wishes to do something voluntarily, that is fine. It is her home. If she wants to, she can do some things. If not, no one, whether it is a man or anyone else, has the right to make her or force her to do this or that. So, that is about women in the home environment.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد با اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today. And that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
So, a woman sometimes assumes the role of a wife in the family, and at other times she assumes the role of a mother. There are certain attributes for each role. In the role of a wife, a woman is primarily a manifestation of calm and made from it its maids, that he might find comfort with her. The Holy Quran, chapter 7, ayah 189. She is a source of calm because life has its ups and downs. In this sea of life, a man is busy with work and turbulences. When he comes home, he needs calm. He needs comfort. This comfort is created by the woman at home. He finds comfort with her. This means that a man should feel calm next to his wife. A woman is a source of tranquility, love, and serenity. A woman's role as a wife is to provide love and serenity.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you. Things that you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You've guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio, with you every single moment.
In the limelight.
The European Union has approved two insects for human consumption. We take a look at some of the European media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. German national broadcaster Deutsche Welle has covered the story and tells us more. The maggot-like larvae of lesser mealworms, a type of shiny black beetle, and house crickets will become the third and fourth insects that can be sold as food for people in the European Union. Eight more applications await approval. On Tuesday, 24th of January, the European Union gave the green light to the sale of the larvae in powder, frozen, paste and dried forms. The crickets can be sold as partially defatted powder. For many Europeans, the thought of eating creatures that wriggle and crawl in any form isn't exactly appealing. But insects, already a delicacy in high-end restaurants around the world, are a normal and healthy part of diets in countries from Mexico to Thailand. They have also captured the attention of scientists and businesses looking to clean up farming and feed the planet's growing population. Most of the planet-heating pollution from food, which accounts for about one quarter of global warming, comes from meat and dairy products. Cows and sheep belch methane, a strong but short-lived greenhouse gas, and farmers raise forests to make pastures and grow soy, three-quarters of which is fed to livestock. If fried crickets and mealworm salads replace some steaks and hamburgers, they can play a small role in stopping species from dying out and the curbing of climate change. It's such a huge challenge to deal with the rising demand for livestock products, said Tim Sershinger, technical director of the food program at the World Resource Institute, an American environmental research organization. Tim Sershinger said, "We pretty much have to pursue every avenue of solution." The European Commission's decision to approve two new insects as food does not appear to be part of a push to change diets, though it said consumption of insects contributes positively to the environment and to health and livelihoods. Instead, the new rules clarify that lesser mealworm larvae and house crickets are safe to eat for those without allergies. They have also ruled that foods containing them must be labelled. Nobody will be forced to eat insects, the European Commission said in a tweet last week. Still, the move could speed up the shift to less environmentally destructive diets. In Germany, for instance, around half the population plan to eat less meat, while in the United States, people are eating more meat, but swapping beef for less polluting meats like chicken. Insect protein could provide a cheap alternative, particularly in processed foods. Between 35% and 60% of the dry weight of insects is made up of protein. The lower end of the range is greater than most plant protein sources, and the upper end is higher than meat and eggs. Insects are better than livestock at turning calories in their feed into calories on their body. They also breed fast and gain weight quickly. Only a handful of studies have tried to work out the environmental damage from eating insects. A life cycle assessment published in 2021 found that protein from yellow mealworms uses 70% less land and pumps 23% less greenhouse gas into the atmosphere than getting the same amount of protein from broiler chicken. Previous studies have also found insects are better for the environment than meat, but they're worse than plants. Still, convincing people in the European Union and the United States to eat more insects could be tricky. 3/4 of European consumers are unwilling to swap meat for insects, and a further 13% are unsure, according to a 2020 report from the European Consumer Organization, an umbrella group partly funded by the European Union. In Germany, 80% of the people say they are disgusted by the idea of eating insects, according to a 2022 report from Germany's environment agency, the UBA. Disgust is seen as the biggest hurdle for the introduction of insects to the Western food market, the authors of the report wrote. Even though Western diets include other foods associated with decay, like moldy cheese and fungi, research into whether these barriers can be overcome is still in its early stages. A study published in December found people were more willing to eat insects after being told about the environmental benefits. The European Commission's website, food.ec.europa.eu, has also covered this story and tells us more. The European Commission has authorized the placing on the market of a fourth insect, Aphytobius diaperionis, or lesser mealworm, as a food. The term lesser mealworm refers to the larval form of Aphytobius diaperionis, an insect species that belongs to the family of darkling beetles. The novel food consists of the frozen, paste, dried and powder forms of house cricket. It is intended to be marketed as a food ingredient in a number of food products for the general population in Europe. In addition, the European Commission has authorized for the first time the placing on the market of partially defatted powder obtained from whole Acheta domesticus or house cricket as a novel food. But why is the European Union approving insects as food? Novel food is defined as food that had not been consumed to a significant degree by humans in the European Union before 15th of May 1997, when the first regulation on novel food came into force. Although there is anecdotal evidence of insects consumed as food in the past, no member state of the European Union has confirmed human consumption to a significant degree prior to 15th of May 1997 for any insect species. The novel food regulation requires an authorization before a novel food product can be placed on the European Union market. The novel food regulation is only about the approval of a product following a stringent scientific assessment made by the European Food Safety Authority, the EFSA. The authority verifies, in light of scientific evidence available, that the food does not pose a safety risk to human health. It is up to consumers in Europe to decide whether they want to eat insects or not. The use of insects as an alternative source of protein is not new, and insects are regularly eaten in many parts of the world. But are there any health issues with eating insects? According to the European Food Safety Authority, the EFSA, food allergies represent an important public health problem, affecting approximately 2-4% of the adult population and up to 8-9% of children. The European Union rules on food labelling identifies a list of 14 allergens that need to be labelled, for example, eggs, milk, fish, crustaceans, etc. This is to allow people living with food allergies to be informed on whether products contain ingredients they are sensitive to. The European Food Safety Authority, the EFSA, concluded the consumption of the evaluated insect proteins may potentially lead to allergic reactions in some people. It may particularly be the case in subjects with the pre-existing allergies to crustaceans, dust mites, and in some cases, mollusks. Additionally, allergens from the feed for for example, glutton, may end up in the insect that is consumed.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
I'm heading with humanitarian aid workers to drop off desperately needed supplies to civilians on the outskirts of Donetsk. Recently, fighting has become fierce as Russia seeks to advance across much of Donbass. A Russian tank fires at Ukrainian positions. As we drive, the boom of incoming not far off, we see the smoke rising from amongst the trees. A few moments later, a Russian artillery unit emerges from the site of the strike. They were hit. We arrive at the arranged gathering site to drop off the supplies. These people live only hundreds of meters from the front and spend most of their time cowering in their apartments.
Now, while I have reported on dozens of the Ukrainian terror strikes in the center of Donetsk, where there are no discernible military targets, bus stations, schools, markets, here we're so close to the front line that the civilians who live here run the extreme risk of getting hit by indirect Ukrainian fire. You can hear the constant incoming and outgoing around these areas. The people here tell me that just yesterday a music school was hit, killing a local man.
Tatiana Montion is a renowned Ukrainian lawyer, today helping to deliver aid.
Where they have to live. You can imagine how many people here. It's about 100,000 people all around the front line. How is it possible to move these people somewhere in safe place? It's impossible, absolutely impossible. So we do what we do. They have no shops, they have no transport, they have no possibility to feed themselves, so we help them.
Tatiana fled Kiev to Donbass 2 years ago, fearing arrest for her outspoken criticism of the Ukrainian government.
Everybody here understands that it's United States made all this trash to weaken European economy, to crash European economy, to force European industry to move to United States. Everybody here understands it. But why not European people? Ordinary people, of course, because I am sure that European top elite understands it best of all. But they're too corrupt to tell about it to their peoples.
On our way to the next drop-off, we're stopped by Russian soldiers. They tell us not to carry on the same road. We get out of the car to assess our options. There is heavy fire nearby. That's the reality across much of Donbass. Back in the car, massive incoming close by, and we're left no choice but to drive fast. In this desolate post-apocalyptic wasteland, it's artillery doing most of the killing. At the next drop-off, this woman tells me her mother is dying on the other side of the front, so she can't be with her in her final days. She breaks down in tears, saying she wants both sides to negotiate a peace. With peace negotiations further away than ever, both Russia and NATO seem determined to end this war with brute force. For the civilians trapped along either side of the battle lines, survival is a daily chore. Many won't see the end of the war. Many won't see the end of this week. Johnny Miller, Donetsk.
Celebrating January 26th, best known as Australia Day, has become increasingly controversial in recent years, with people holding rallies on this day to highlight the historical plight of Aboriginals. Many Indigenous Australians who traced their lineage on the continent back 50,000 years